This is the Valley Outdoors, and we are glad to have you guys with us this week. Lots of fun things going on, lots to talk about. A cruise line that chose not so wisely on where to port. And we're looking at a link between ticks and invasive, shall we say, the CWD. It's kind of an interesting study that went on. So stay tuned. That and more when we return. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Hello, Ava. Hello, Don.
Hello.
And how are things in your neck of the woods? Everybody had a good week?
Absolutely.
Yeah, just got back from a little trip.
You had a little fun up up north, I understand.
Yes.
Up to the Great Northland, the hinterlands.
You know the best part?
Uh-uh.
It was cool.
You know what the best part was? It was cool down here, too.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. It was awesome. All week was fantastic.
Did you hit 40?
Huh?
Did you get into the 40s?
No.
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 50s,
oh,
though.
You did.
I'll tell you what.
You know how fresh that is?
I know. You wake up and it's 55 or 50. You had to put in a little pullover. You head out onto the water. Last weekend, I was out and enjoyed time on the river. Had an absolute riot. Went fish bowl Saturday and Sunday. I mean, it was fun. It was absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
Walleye fishing was not so hot and awesome. We chose to do some other fishing on the lower end of the river, but went out and had a great time with the panfish on Saturday. I got a 10.5-inch sunfish.
Oh, that's a nice one.
And I pulled it out of the water and they're like, put me back. I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
But I...
Put him back?
Yeah, he's a little large to keep, so...
Yeah.
The rest of him, dinner is
maybe
served.
Maybe he'll grow more big ones.
More bigger?
Yeah. That'd be good.
How was it up by you, though? Good?
Fishing was slow. I mean, even the locals were having... a struggle a little bit with the walleyes, but one of the fun things about it is we had a couple of lake trout were caught, surprisingly in fairly shallow water. Mark, he caught one that he never got to see it. He said it was the biggest fish he's ever had.
He didn't catch it.
He hooked it, yes.
Yeah.
And he fought it and chased it, and finally the hook gave out. But one of the gentlemen, he caught a nice 27-incher, 28-incher it was. It was a nice lake trout.
Nice.
And but weather-wise, it was pretty good. We had one day that was not so accommodating, so we played dice.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no.
That's what vacation's for, right?
Yeah, beautiful area.
I was, in my notes for the show, I put down color and panfish, a not-so-scientific study.
Yeah.
You know, what's fun is when you can go out and play and experiment, and that's, you know, what I've been doing walleye fishing for years. And on the panfish side, I haven't really been able to spend that much time doing that. And so I went out on Saturday and had a multitude of colors and multitudes of types of jigs. So I'm a Cubby jig fan. You know, the 32nd ounce Cubby jig. It's got a tail that vibrates and moves. Since the bobber's moving on top a little bit, that thing's just going crazy underwater.
Yeah.
Either a small leech, usually for panfish, I'll take a leech and quarter it. I think we talked about that last show. So I decided to try it with some different other jigs. So I tried a 32nd ounce hair jig in white. That did great.
Yeah.
I did white with pink.
You familiar with a flu-flu?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is more of a regular hair, not a marabou. or okay. a stiff hair. Yep. This is more of a just a regular, like a deer hair. Like it's JB Lures makes it. But then I tried Fire Tiger. Now, get this. Every situation I was throwing in the same general spot, it was a longer cast between a tree lay down and kind of a channel that lets the river run through between a log and this fall down. So it runs, you know, with the open spot of this open channel runs with the river. So you throw it up river and you let it drift through. And at a certain point, 3 feet from where I cast, it's a bobber down program. I put the Fire Tiger on, tried a couple spots close, nothing. I said, okay, we'll go to the gimme spot. I throw it out there. I drift. Nothing. I had a little worm on there. Same thing.
Yep.
Threw it back out. Drift. Nothing. 5 times I tried it. Nothing. Pulled the jig off. Went back to the white. First pass. Down. The thing goes. Did the same thing close. Took the white jig. Put it close. There's an area just not far from the boat. Literally almost dropped it over the side. Bobber goes down right away. Put the Fire Tiger back on. Dropped it to the same spot. Nothing. And then I got ended up with a little tiny one that was apparently the stupid one. You know, the dork fish.
Oh, yeah. Run,
or who was it talks about?
Dumb and Dumbest?
No, it's dork fish. I forget. One of the comedians from the Blue Collar Comedy Tour. He talks about the dork fish. It's just great. He's like, oh, the stupidest fish in the world. Can you believe it? I'm the only one that's going to catch it. But point was, there are bait colors even in panfish. If you even if you have a worm on that would be absolutely the meal of the day for these panfish, they won't go after it. And it's the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. But it just goes to show, prove to yourself, but not just prove, let yourself not be lazy when you go out and do this, because it will trigger bigger fish. There's different colors that will trigger bigger fish. And don't be afraid to switch up. If you've been fishing a spot for a while, change up and go with that, another favorite color, pink and white, or maybe chartreuse or Tennessee red. A red body with a black head on it also has worked great as well. So have that in your mix that I'm going to try some different things and see what really is triggering those fish. It was a surprise to me how dramatic the shutdown corner situation was. It was 0-0-0, and everything else was 100% fire. So it definitely can make a difference. So choose your color wisely. I met a gentleman at the boat ramp. He said he listens to the show every week. I'm going to say hi to him. He listens every Saturday in town and or just outside of Red Wing.
Yeah.
And was out. He's a warrior with a Suzuki on it. So thanks for the shout out. Appreciate that on Saturday. So it's kind of cool. So a little fun in the water. Both of us did.
Yeah, it's good to be out there, catch some rays.
A little fun here and there.
A little quiet time.
Well, I'm liking the weather. I will tell you that, guys. There's been nothing but nice. Got the chance to trip down to Nashville, do a little sea trial down there for Cheryl. So hang tight. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit about a cruise line apology. You won't believe the story. Hang tight. Hey guys, as always, we'd like to have you check us out on The Valley Outdoors. Where else, Don?
On The Valley Outdoors Facebook.
Yeah.
Well, I usually get to do the website. You usually do Facebook.
I know, I switch it up on
you switch it up.
He totally got stuck for a second.
No, I wasn't stuck.
I turned and went, I'm just going to surprise
him. I got confused.
Yeah, go to thevalleyoutdoors.com and check out the Facebook page, too.
See, you had to say it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Oh, Don, I tell you. I'm looking forward to going fishing. You know where I'm going?
Where are you going?
Lake of the Woods.
Lake of the Woods. When are you going?
Tomorrow morning.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Fine. 5 a.m., 5 days.
Are you taking the long haul? Across the big puddle?
Going across the big pond. You always give me crap about that. And of course, I don't care myself because we're driving I'm in the Vexus. The funny part about the story is because all the history in the past years having, other different boat brands, Rangers and whatever, all the guys that have gone or that are going on the trip have all my past boats. So guess who gets to do all the maintenance on anything that's gone wrong for the past 3 years that I have, if I haven't been around them?
Well, of course, you.
Me.
You sold them the lemon.
No, it's no lemon.
Why is there maintenance?
Huh?
Why is there maintenance?
Because every boat needs some type of maintenance, or they've done nothing to it.
I just came back from one, and I noticed my trim tab's missing on my motor.
Oh, that fell out?
Somehow.
You weren't paying attention.
How do you see that one?
Well, I'd be surprised if your prop's not dinged. When those come out, your prop usually will smack it pretty heavy.
Yeah, it might have a nick in it.
I had that happen. We're doing a dealer meeting down in Arkansas 1 year, and I couldn't for the life of me figure out why my prop had this ginormous dent in all three blades. And then I found out why.
Oh, yeah.
That the flat plate dropped down, prop rotated into it.
Yeah,
and
sure.
That stainless got smacked. It was lucky it didn't break anything else. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to going up the Lake of the Woods. It should be a really good time. The fun part about it is it's competitive between boats, just as a fun competitive.
How many are going?
Eight.
Eight boats?
Eight
anglers.
Eight guys.
Okay.
So four boats.
Four boats.
And I'm a jigging fan. Jigging is my deal. There's nothing better than jig fishing.
Yeah.
And when you can go up and I can do my favorite, and then I start throwing some big plastics on, and the other guys are looking at me like, what are you going to do with that thing? And then I start hooking big fish.
Yeah.
They're like, you got any extra? Well,
no.
How many bait shops are close by? None, right? It's going to cost you. It's amazing how much you can get for one plastic minnow. So that's going to be fun. But I really look forward to that. In the past years, the part that's been a bummer is the weather, believe it or not, has been less than optimal on the way back. And one of the guys had a bilge pump that went out, didn't know it. Auto bilge.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, the motor ingested water. He had four guys in the boat. So it was my old boat, so I jumped in quick and looked around what was going on. And sure enough, there was water in the boat. And I said, put that other bilge pump on, because the one was just trickling out. Apparently, it was clogged with debris.
Yep.
And the other one, we got that going. And I jumped in, and we finally got the motor going. It blew the water out. Luckily, it wasn't to the point of a complete hydro, but the waves were not. It was that normal 13 to 14 mile an hour trip.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, I mean, the reason I always say that going across the big puddle is I've got caught out there, 40 mile an hour winds, and that gives you a new respect for big water.
It does, I think.
I watch the weather really close before I head out on it.
Usually in the mornings when we leave and come back, it's not bad. You get out in the morning. If you wait till later in the afternoon, evening, the wind usually gets to the point where not good.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is if you take off, typically it's pretty calm early morning.
That's what we always come back.
Yeah.
But heading into Vexus, that's a whole different ride. I'm not going to lie. You don't spear waves like the other boats do. It just surprises me how different a ride can be. I never thought it could be that different with the hull design change. Yeah. So really pretty cool.
Well, you have fun.
I'm going to do that. We'll have a fun
We'll
report.
Expect big fish stories next week.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know about big ones, but we'll have a lot. That's going to be fun. I'm not going for the big fish.
It's really dangerous to say, you know.
What?
We're going to have lots.
It's not a big deal. I'm not worried about that. We just don't go for the big ones because the big ones are, you know, you can get them, but it's not like you're going to target them.
Right.
And then we like to eat fish, so it's a good thing. Speaking of a not a good thing, you guys are... I don't know how to take the story. Don and I, we chatted about this off air, but a cruise line apologizes for distress, in parentheses, after passengers witness a whale hunt. A whale hunt near the Faroe Islands left passengers in a cruise line in distress as they watched dozens of pilot whales in a whale hunt that were being harvested. Ambassador Cruise Line apologized to the customers following the July 9th hunt when locals harvested 78 pilot whales, members of the dolphin family. The company issued a statement via Twitter in which it condemned the hunt and apologized to all the passengers aboard the ship at the time. We strongly object to this outdated practice and have been working with our partner, Orca, O-R-C-A, a charity dedicated to studying and protecting whales, dolphins, and porpoises in the UK and European waters to encourage change since 2021, the ambassador wrote, stressing its commitment to sustainability as a core value. We fully appreciate that witnessing this local event would have been distressing for the majority of guests on board, the company added. Accordingly, we would like to sincerely apologize to them for anyone that's unduly upset. The ambassador reiterated the company's commitment to protecting whales and dolphins and highlighted the effort to educate our guests and crew not to buy or eat any whale or dolphin meat to avoid contributing to the continued commercial whaling industry around the world. Now, the hunt, known as the Grindadrop, also called the grind, which translates to whale harvest, happens regularly throughout the year, according to Newsweek. The locals herd a large pod of whale into shallower waters where they harvest them with knives and hooks in a traditional manner. Traditional manner.
Yeah, well, either way, it's a tradition.
Yeah, so let me continue here, and we'll get that. Review of the hunt found the residents had done X number, responded placing a limit of 500 on the specific breed. The Faroese government insists, the website, that the practice is deemed sustainable, requiring all hunters to carry a license and only hunt in designated areas, and notes that the total population in that region is 778,000 of these whales, and that only 100,000 of them come near the Faroe Islands, and in which they can only kill a small portion of that. While the whaling in the Faroe Islands has been regulated for centuries, the law explicitly states that the hunt is to be conducted in such a way as to cause the least suffering for the whales. Government stressed that the killing is not commercial, and anything is caught is distributed for free to the local community where the hunt happens as part of a traditional community-based sharing, with whale meat and blubber occasionally available for sale and some of the supermarkets there and on the dockside. I'm sorry, Don, I agree with you. If you're going to plan a trip via, you know, if the cruise line plans a trip, somebody didn't do their research.
Well, I would say if I was on a cruise ship and I witnessed something of that nature, and it's a tradition that they've been doing for centuries.
Yep.
I would ask for a refund, as I didn't see that on the itinerary when I signed up for the cruise.
Yep.
There's a big ocean out there that they could have gone to another
else.
Port
if you're they offended didn't want, by it.
If
yeah.
you're offended by it. So I don't know about the, if there's any harm to the environment doing this or not. But if it's a tradition, it's their tradition. And like you said, there's 100,000. They only took 70.
Yeah, it's
you got to believe that many.
Not very many.
A lot more than that just die naturally every year. So
yeah. Well, and again, it's one of those things, the tradition. So that's kind of the element behind it. So we'll tell you what, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. And we're going to talk about the new action called for, and the Minnesota DNR looking to update the invasive perch plan. Stay tuned for that.
Does your family need a break from the daily routine?
Hello, I'm Dr. Spruce. If you or someone you know needs a healthy dose of nature, visit discovertheforest.org and trade in the big screen for the big blue sky by visiting a local park or forest near you.
Hiking, picnicking, swimming, orienteering, climbing, admiring wildlife, or inhaling fresh air may result in heightened creativity, feelings of joy, harmony, satisfaction, and a euphoria that can only be explained as oneness with the natural world. Whoa.
Well, Don, Have you ever read stories about snakes or spiders, and that kind of gives you the heebie-jeebies?
No.
You ever had it? You ever done that, Ava? It's like you read a story,
yeah,
or
all the time.
Okay. You ever heard a story about or seen somebody that pulls a tick off, and you've been in the same area, and all of a sudden you're
itchy.
You're like,
oh, I feel
wait a minute, I think I got a tick.
Yep.
Okay, so everybody gets done with this one. I think you're going to be looking for ticks.
In all the wrong places?
No, I didn't say that. You did. Research now shows ticks could spread CWD in the deer population. Heather Inzalco was a lead researcher for a project that looked at whether ticks could carry the spread of CWD to other deer. University of Wisconsin Madison researcher discovered the ticks could host CWD and spread the virus, or prions. Now, that's the big thing that creates the spreading to other whitetails if the deer ate the ticks off the other, the whitetail deer.
Not if they're bit by another one, huh?
No.
Only if they consume.
Well, stay tuned. All right. Research concluded that prions and ticks from three CWD-positive deer heads had infectious dose ranges from 0.3 to 42.4 per tick. That means that one tick in the study had about 1/3 of an infectious dose, while another tick had 42.4 times the infectious dose of CWD. She said the deer engaging in all grooming, which is a type of grooming between the same members of the species. During that, they're picking off ticks and parasites from one another, sometimes ingesting the ticks. That's where I was trying to figure out, so I had to read through the story. She said out of 2,000 deer heads that she viewed, 173 of them were infested with ticks. Out of 173, 15 of them tested positive for CWD. Of the 15, only 3 had prions in them. She collected from the ear of these CWD-positive deer and tested it. She discovered that while there was a correlation between the ear tissue testing positive and the tick testing positive, also the deer tissue, ear of the deer tissue, had higher amounts of prions correlated with the ticks and having higher numbers of prions as well. Took that information to determine that one infectious dose was tested with the prions. She determined that 3 deer heads had prions. 2 of them were over the infectious dose. In other words, over that 0.3 of a dose, meaning the infected wasn't infected yet because it was under dosage. It hadn't gotten it yet because it was 0.3 of a dose, not enough. And the other 2 were infected, it recorded at 6.92, 42 times the infectious dose. So what does it come down to? Essentially, ticks are just taking up the prions, and inadvertently, because they're taking a blood meal and they're acting as like a Tic Tac is what she refers to them as. And deer come along and eat them. If you had a tick engorged itself on CWD-positive deer, somehow found its way to a human and fed on the human, and unlikely any prions are getting transmitted from the tick to the human species. So, a lot's been learned. The important part, though, was trying to control that spread is where I think we're going to find ourselves having a little bit of a problem if you look at the rate in which that can happen within the deer. I think that's why it also, you look at the deer raising deer farms.
Yep.
Those are very prone to having that kind of thing done too. So,
sure.
But that was kind of a cool deal in my mind. What do you guys think? I mean, have you ever seen, you've had ticks on you before, haven't you?
Of course.
And?
No, thank you.
You pull them off.
No heebie-jeebies?
No. I get the heebie-jeebies.
Do you?
Yeah, and it's always like you wake up in the middle of the night and you feel them.
Oh, they,
slowly.
They walk with overshoes on, you know. You can feel them walk right up your arm.
Ugh.
Or elsewhere.
Gross.
There you go. There he goes. Again.
See, and I've got the heebie-jeebies.
I told you you would. Let's give you another heebie-jeebie. Minnesota DNR is calling an update to the plan for invasive carp.
Yeah,
doing
okay.
An update.
What's the update?
there's a lot of questions and what will happen with invasive carp in the state, and some ideas on how they can address the Mississippi River, and how that transit will occur. They want to gather everybody together at the table and have folks on the same page and examine values, not just the science of what's at issue. And it's definitely something that's traveling upriver right now. Pool 2 Pool 9 and 10 have got them. They're moving up.
You're talking Asian carp now.
Asian carp.
Yep.
Yep. And what they want to see is more of an action plan that's oriented toward prevention. Some of the things they're talked about in the first couple of meetings is make me worry that they're thinking about management and not prevention. Management and prevention are obviously two very different things. In most of Minnesota, prevention is still on the table, but only if we act right now. Once they get established, it's nothing you can do at that point. The value group will meet first in two or three meetings per month. There'll be additional homework to complete before the next meeting, and it'll be talking about various levels and methodologies to control that. And the Stop Carp Coalition is pushing for a bioacoustic fish fence at Lock and Dam 5, but $17 million proposal was not passed by legislators. Just wait till it actually ends up in their neighborhood and see what happens. So,
yeah.
Not fun. In anybody's mind, it's not fun. And you know what? Those invasive carp, I've seen them and seen what they're capable of doing, and it's devastating. So, devastating was this show, man. I got to tell you, this was devastation.
Yeah,
all across the map, all across the Midwest. Thank you guys for joining us. I'm Eric for Ava, Don. We are the Valley Outdoors, and we are out of here. Have a great weekend, everybody.